Looks like Hurricane Sandy did not destroy job creation last month. From APM, it's the Marketplace Midday Update for Friday, December 7th, 2012. I'm Jeremy Hobson. Will Michigan pass right-to-work laws? Another earthquake and tsunami in Japan, not so bad this time. Companies may be able to squeeze more productivity out of their workers by opening up shared office spaces. And how do you say Google in Swedish? Those stories and more coming up on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
The number of the day is 146,000. That is how many jobs were added last month, and they were all private sector jobs. The unemployment rate fell to a four-year low of 7.7%. That's according to the Labor Department this morning. Julia Coronado is chief economist with the investment bank BNP Paribas, and she is with us now from New York. Good morning.
Good morning.
So I guess everyone thought that the numbers would be far lower because of Hurricane Sandy. So what happened?
Well, the Labor Department said that it just didn't show up in the numbers, which is surprising because it did show up in jobless claims. So we know some people were, in fact, sidelined because of the hurricane, but just didn't show up in these numbers. So they look very much like the last few months, steady but unspectacular job growth.
What sectors are responsible for this kind of growth right now?
What we're seeing is that the manufacturing sector, which had been a bright spot in the last couple of years, has lost some steam. But sectors like retail, leisure, and hospitality, which are the tourism-related sectors, and, of course, healthcare, are creating jobs at a pretty steady pace.
Now, the unemployment rate did drop, as we said, to 7.7%, a four-year low, which seems like good news. Is it?
Not as good as you might think. So all of the decline in the unemployment rate came from people giving up the job search and leaving the labor force. So we continue to see people leaving the labor force. That means fewer workers in the economy and slower growth. And that is increasingly looking like the hard reality we face.
And one of the big concerns as we head into next month is, of course, the fiscal cliff and whether that's going to impact job creation or even cause companies to lay people off. What's your expectation at this point, Julia, about what's going to happen with the fiscal cliff?
I actually think that, you know, looking through some of the rhetoric and noise, the negotiations are progressing in a pretty positive direction. So I remain pretty optimistic that we're going to come to an agreement before year end, maybe even before the holidays, and we won't fall off the cliff in January.
Some Friday optimism from Julia Coronado, chief economist with the investment bank BNP Paribas. Thanks as always.
It's a pleasure.
Well, in the markets this morning, stocks were lower across Europe and Asia until that jobs report came out. And as we record this podcast, just before the close in Europe, the markets in London and in Paris are up about 0.2%. On Wall Street this morning, the Dow, the Nasdaq, and the S&P all up a fraction of a percent. Michigan is likely to join 23 other states with right-to-work laws. Republicans passed legislation yesterday through the state's House and Senate amid strong opposition from unions. Our senior business correspondent Bob Moon reports it's another tough blow for organized labor.
Organized labor had long maintained a strong foothold across America's Rust Belt until recently. It was only this past February that Indiana became the first state in over a decade to adopt a new right-to-work law. But a similar effort in Ohio wasn't successful. In Michigan, the idea of such a setback in a longtime cradle of organized labor had seemed next to impossible. So how has this happened? Michigan State University labor expert Dale Bellman notes that union representation in his state has slipped to 18% of workers.
With the decline in manufacturing, unionization has declined in the Rust Belt pretty substantially.
The political balance also shifted with the rise of the Tea Party in legislatures across the region. But Bellman believes labor could eventually reclaim some ground.
Of course, what we're looking at now in this case is a lame duck session when things are actually starting to shift back.
Bellman points out the labor management alliance between large auto companies and their unions voiced opposition to the change in Michigan, a sign that labor relations with the car makers have actually been on the upswing. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
A 7.3 magnitude earthquake struck this morning off the coast of Japan, causing a relatively small tsunami and an evacuation of some coastal areas. The good news is there have been no reports of significant damage. Yumiko Ono is managing editor for The Wall Street Journal's Japanese Language Service, and she is with us now from Tokyo. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, so far, it doesn't seem like there are any real reports of damage from this earthquake and tsunami this morning.
That's right. There may be some people who were injured, but there are no reports of big damages anywhere yet, but it sure did shake a lot, even in Tokyo, hundreds of kilometers away from the epicenter.
What kind of investment has been made by the government in Japan to better prepare for these kinds of things since the quake last year?
Well, a lot of things have happened. I mean, we've all taken lots of steps to prepare. Even in our office here, I have a helmet and a backpack with water and food. We have enough supplies to last for a few days. For all of Japan also, there's been construction going on. There's more of an effort to try to take another look at whether the nation is prepared for a big shake or a big tsunami.
Now, there was some market reaction after the earthquake happened this morning, and I assume that that was because of the just enormous economic impact from the tsunami last year.
That's right. But the fact that it didn't last very long shows that, you know, after a while, the reaction wasn't as large as, you know, if it were really a big earthquake. Another thing that I thought was very interesting is how the media reacted to this. About 10 seconds after the earthquake, all the regular programming shut down and the emergency earthquake programming started up again. But the announcer on NHK, which is like the public broadcasting system in Japan, had such a tone of urgency when saying, you know, please run as fast as you can, evacuate now. That was so different from the last time around that it was really striking.
Yumiko Ono, managing editor for the Wall Street Journal's Japanese language website. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to freakonomicsradio.com.
Well, as companies large and small try to squeeze even more productivity out of their existing employees, Marketplace economics correspondent Chris Farrell says they might consider putting all their workers in the same physical space. Chris, good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy.
Well, so explain why having employees working together in the same space makes us more productive than if we were to be working in our own offices.
You know, Jeremy, it's all about creativity. You know, we live in the age of knowledge, the age of information. And so what we've learned over time is there's a one form of creativity where you sit in your office and, you know, you're all by yourself, the lone ranger. But most of the times, good ideas come from conversation. So I might say to you, Jeremy, I got this great idea for a new series. And you'll go, Chris, I'm glad you're thinking, but you're not going anywhere. But what about this? Okay. And you have this back and forth, and then you go off and you do your own work. So collaboration, teamwork in a knowledge economy is increasingly important.
But of course, in the name of collaboration, what a lot of companies are doing is they're dividing up their office space. They're taking away those walls and they're putting everybody in a big bullpen where they can all hang out together and nobody has any privacy. And the employees end up hating it.
Obviously, you read the comic strip Dilbert. I don't want to sound cynical here, but, you know, management talks a good game about creativity and collaboration. But when it comes down to the open office design, what they really liked is that it's cheap. It's cheap to set up. If you need to add employees, it's cheap to add some more employees there. If you need to move the furniture around, it's not that expensive. And so efficiency dominated creativity. And that really can't continue because, you know, people put their headphones on because it's so noisy and you're kind of defeating the whole purpose.
But it's funny that you say that we should all be in these offices together and seeing one another, because so much of business, it seems like now, is moving to remote locations. People can be anywhere they want. They can work from home. They can, you know, just video conference.
Well, you know, there's always been this sort of thesis that, you know, cities were going to disappear for just the same reasons that you're saying, and the office would disappear. And what's happened? Cities are more economically important than ever. People need to be around each other, exchanging ideas. That's where the creativity comes from. I think the same thing is true with the office. The office might be smaller. People might not come in all the time. It's no longer 9 to 5. You're going in and out. Nevertheless, place, conversation, face-to-face time. When you're dealing with generating ideas, innovation, knowledge, you need that conversation.
Marketplace Economics correspondent Chris Farrell, thanks as always.
Thank you.
And finally, there are some brands that seem to be universal, like McDonald's or Starbucks or Google. But the Atlantic Wire points out that Google is not Google all over the world. At least the phrase to Google is not said the same way. And so here are a few of the translations. Italian.
Googlare.
Spanish.
Googlear.
French.
Google.
Swedish.
At Googla.
Slovenian.
Poguglati.
And in Redmond, Washington, the home of Microsoft.
Bing.
Yep. Bing. That's how they say it there in Redmond, Washington. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.